Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, listeners. This is Patty Black, and I am back bringing the Good News Show to you. This morning's show is going to be very exciting. We have an author who has written a book. His name is Kevin Rice. His book is entitled The Game of Love, Changing the Rules Changes Everything. So stay tuned. We're going to have a wonderful show. And I just want to let you know, last week we had Toscarino on the show. She wrote The Eat Clean Diet, and we have had a large response from that show. We've had more listeners than we've ever had. So if you haven't heard that show, go to the archives and listen to that show. Now, this morning's show with Kevin is going to be very exciting. He's from the age of 15, Kevin had dedicated his life to spiritual education. Kevin hosted his own television show and has lectured to thousands of people across the country. He's a former fundamentalist evangelist and was introduced to A Course in Miracles in 1991. He has combined the pace and passions of theory paths with the warm and happy message of an unending love. From guilt to release, from fear to love, from conflict to peace, Rice's bold new message takes him to packed audiences around the country as one of America's foremost authorities on love, relationships, and spirituality. So we're going to be bringing him on in just a couple of seconds. And I am on air with Sherry. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Patty, and good morning, everybody. I am very excited also to have Kevin with us this morning because I have been a studier of The Course in Miracles for many years, but never have I heard anything like I've heard from Kevin and from his book. So I'm really excited to hear what he's got to say. He puts things into simple terms where from The Course in Miracles where sometimes it tends to be a little wordy or a little like, I don't know what's going on here. What are they really saying? Kevin says it in a very simple way, and he really brings it to the heart. So I'm really happy to have him, and I know you're really going to enjoy this show because who doesn't want to talk about relationships? You know, it's all about relationships.
It's going to be great. So listeners, stay tuned. We have Kevin, and let's bring him on air with us now. Kevin, good morning. Welcome to the Good News Show.
It's good to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. As I was saying, it's such a delight to have been reading your book and to tell everybody that the way that you interpret things is like nothing I've ever heard before. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
From the age of 15, I was in Kansas City at the time, and I was taken under the owner of a television station, Channel 15, Kansas City, had taken me under his wing because he had heard me speak and offered me a television show and weekly speaking and tours across the nation with music groups, two sets of music groups, and then I would speak and so forth. And that continued until I graduated and I went to study under Jimmy Swaggart in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I was very committed to my faith and my religion. And Jimmy, during his, as all of you may recall, that infamous day when he got in front of the podium and in front of the nation and apologized for his misdeeds, I was in the second row there. And
wow.
And afterwards, I knew Jimmy very well, and I went up to him and I said, you know, I don't understand why your present behavior does not correspond with your past statements. And he pointed his finger right in my face, and he said, Kevin, you probably have skeletons in your closet, too. And, well, I did. And but nevertheless, I had put Jimmy upon a pedestal and asked him to be something that no man can be, and that is absolutely perfect. And so I was distraught, nevertheless, and I went back to Kansas City, and I was offered another show, And so I took it, but I wasn't feeling the peace that passes all understanding. And so I quit everything. I quit the television show. I quit speaking. And I went home and opened up the phone book randomly and picked out a psychiatrist in 1991. And I went to him, and I explained to him everything that was going on. And he said, "Kevin, I've never done this in my 15 years of practice, but something is strongly guiding me to give you a book." And he gave me A Course in Miracles. And he said, "You don't need therapy. In fact, I don't even expect that you'll be back." And I didn't go back. I kept in communication with him as a friend. But the book, I devoured it, read it through again, and studied it intensely for a year or two, and began lecturing and teaching A Course in Miracles at Unity Village. Actually, it was first in Kansas City at Unity Temple on the Plaza. And then Chris Jackson, who was then the executive vice president of the world headquarters of Unity, came and heard me speak. And he and I then became the best of friends. And at that time, A Course in Miracles was banned at Unity Village. And I told Chris at the time, "Hey, I'm going to be speaking there in a few weeks. Of Course in Miracles, I can just feel it." And he was like, "Right, whatever." Because he was on a board of like 12 people. And he went to this board meeting, and within 2 minutes, they undid that ban, said that they had, 10 years ago, a decade ago, made a poor decision out of fear. And now they're printing excerpts from A Course in Miracles in Unity Magazine. And all of their publications. And I was the first to speak at Unity Village a few weeks later for a continuing series on A Course in Miracles. And then Chris and I later on toured the nation with a lecture series called Unity, You, and A Course in Miracles. So, and of course, I followed them down here to Florida. And I don't like the weather up there in Kansas City. And I came down here and continued my speaking. And someone, when I was lecturing, said, "Why aren't you writing a book about this?" I was lecturing at the time on relationships. And I said, "You know, I would, but I'm working full-time here as director of operations of an organization." And he said, "Quit, and me and my friend will pay you to finish the book." And they did that, and I finished the book and worked with a wonderful copy editor, and so it's just been released, and it's been going very well, and the speaking engagements and so forth, and so I've been very happy about it.
Well, the title of the book is amazing. You just want it. The Game of Love, Changing the Rules Changes Everything. We had a someone that emailed us, and there's been a few questions, a few different emails. So maybe after you just go tell us a little bit about the book, and
okay,
then I'll be able to ask you some of the questions that have been put to us.
All right. Well, first of all, let me premise it by saying the book is called The Game of Love, Changing the Rules Changes Everything. But I want to make it very clear. And I make it clear in the introduction that love is not a game. But the way that it is played within this world, it is played like a game with certain rules. And what I have done is to extract five rules from the ego standpoint. And the ego is just simply an acronym for edging God out. And fear is an acronym for false evidence appearing real. And so you're at any given point listening to one of two voices, the voice of the ego, the voice of fear, or the voice of that spirit of love that lies just underneath it. And so in the book, I give the upside-down version of the rules and then I offer the right side up version of the rules. I can quickly go over them with you. The first one is the belief that love is not now. It's the ego's rendition of romance, which, by the way, was created in the 11th and 15th centuries. It was man-made, and it's documented. But the first rule of the ego, as I said, is that love is not here. It's in the future when I meet some soulmate, the person I'm supposed to be with, the perfect person, or it's in the cherished memory of the past. And what the problem with this is when your mind is continually going into the past and into the future, you are avoiding the present moment, the aperture of the now moment where all love and light flow through us. And I say all love and light because you cannot have a judgment about another when you're truly in the present moment. Now, the right set up version of that, and I'm being very brief and the book goes into it into great detail, is that love is now. And not only is it now, it's accessible regardless of the situation that you're in. Whether you're in a marriage, whether you're single or so forth, that the comforts of unconditional love is right here and right now. It's like the Polynesians used to say, you know, we're sitting on a whale and we have everything we want, you know, i.e. love, that we could ever desire. And yet we're still throwing our nets over the side of the whale trying to catch the right, quote unquote, you catch the right fish. And it's simply ludicrous. The second rule of the ego is that love is without. In other words, I'm not going to be happy until I find a source of love outside of me to complete me. And in the book, I go into the processes of projection and so forth, and what I call the stuffed rabbit syndrome, in which people try to extract from another that which they think is lacking within themselves. And so they're on a search. And one of the things that people in counseling sessions, I just had one right before the show, you know, how do I find love? Well, my advice was give up the search for it, because the search is implying that what you're looking for, you don't have. And when you begin to give up the search, and this is the right side up version, you begin to recognize the rule of the of love, and that is that love is also within you. And you're never going to find it as long as you're searching for it outside of yourself, quote-unquote outside of yourself. And I say quote-unquote outside of yourself because the premise of the book is one of us being all one, connectedly, emotionally, on a molecular level. I mean, you and Patty right now are sitting together probably and exchanging molecules right now, and the only thing that is separating each of you from the other are your interpretations, your judgments, and so forth. And so the book attempts to give exercises, practical exercises, of how to remove those wedges so that we're not seeing through this filter of fear and can instead see our brothers and sisters and God without the dark lens of fear we often put in front of our faces. The third one is where I think people get very confused, and I hope I've clarified it in the book. And that is they focus upon this is the ego upside down rule. They focus upon the form of the relationship. And when I say form, I mean the marriage, dating, having sex, going out to dinner, you know, having conversation. Form is the way that love shows up. And the confusion that the ego wants us to believe is that the form, which naturally changes, is actually permanent, and the love which flows through that form is impermanent, when the exact opposite is true. The right setup version would be love is substance. There's an old saying in the Arantia. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Well, it's a wonderful book. But there's a quote there that says, the riverbed is not the river. And essentially, what that is saying is that the river, love, is not the riverbed, you know, that which carries that love. Unfortunately, most people mistake the two and are looking not for love, but for a form or a container to put their pre-idealized concept of love within it and then close it away from the rest of the world. And so I use in my book an example of Palm Beach, and I have many friends in Palm Beach, and I, of course, not everyone perceives this, but it's as though two people draw a line. It's like Palm Beach. You know, it's an island seemingly cut off and separated from the mainland, and there's an imaginary line drawn around that island that says abundance is contained here. And what many Palm Beachers do and what many people in relationships do is they don't care about abundance. They want to know how it's going to be displayed, how it's going to show up, you know, how are people going to look at us and so forth. And people in relationships do the same thing. They draw a line around the couple, the relationship, and they say that love is in here, in this circle, but it's not outside of it, as do Palm Beachers. If you go across that bridge to West Palm Beach, you know, that's where abundance is not. Does that follow? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, as you said, a complex book, A Course in Miracles, and so I've tried to, again, extract it and make it as simple as possible. And then fourthly, the upside-down version of the ego is that love is punishment. Because what invariably happens, I describe two kinds of relationships in the book, and it is from A Course in Miracles. One is the special love relationship, and this is the ego's version of relationship. Well, because people rely so much on the form, as I discussed previously, and less on the substance, the river of love flowing through that form, they're looking to the frame and not the picture. All of a sudden, their special love relationships turn into their special hate relationships. And so what is required is punishment. And it can be subtle. It can be not so subtle. But nevertheless, it happens. And it is just a continuation of this cycle of sabotage that I am describing to you. The right side up version says, hey, we don't meet mistake, you know, we don't meet mistakes with punishment. We meet mistakes with correction. And we do it from a posture of love, not from a posture of fear, which would only add to it and add to the problem and make it worse into a kind of snowball effect. And then fifthly and lastly, by the way, the right side up version of love is punishment is love is freedom. And that's freedom from guilt, freedom from self-punishment, freedom from punishing others. And all that, again, stems from the fact that we're one. When I make a judgment about you, I am making that same judgment about myself. Because we never respond to anyone directly. We only respond to our interpretation of people. And that's where we get caught up. You know, I'm not bad, she is. Well, what we're trying to do here is not change people's behavior in relationships, or not to try to change other people, but rather to change our minds about other people. And I offer exercises to do just that. And then fifthly, and lastly, love is destruction. You know, people think that love, which is all-encompassing, I say in the book, you know, we are to God like fish are in the ocean, that wherever we go and whatever we're doing, we're always doing it within this ocean of love. But the ego doesn't want us to see it. It wants us to restrict our focus to say, hey, love is here, but if I go to a prison house, it's not there. And my message, the right side of version, love is creation, is that love doesn't stop being loving just because you're fearful. You know, just as peace doesn't stop being peaceful just because you're in conflict. You've simply moved yourself out of that realm of the now moment, which is, again, the very first premise, the realm of the now moment, that we can see each other through a mirror brightly and not through a glass darkly. And then I have a final chapter called The End Game, which gives people kind of a message to go forward and put on the mantle of love and let this be their new way of looking at life. And everyone who has gone through these exercises and have applied them concretely have found success, because peace is and love is just a second away. It's right here, right now, and all we have to do is change our mind and say, you know, spirit, God, whatever. You know, I'm not into words. Words are merely symbols of symbols, so they're twice removed from reality. So I'm not getting caught up in that. But spirit, help me to see the situation differently. You know, sometimes we can't do it by ourselves and discipline our minds to change when we need them to. And so I want the listeners to know that they're not without a present help in times of need. God is here. And the Spirit of God that flows through all of us, the Spirit of love, is also there to take us from where we are now across the bridge to the other side, where we actually find love from the premise of union and not from the premise of fear and separation. How's that?
That's great. Well, that brings me to a question that I was emailed from an Adrienne right here in Miami, and she was wanting to ask you about building trust after a lie and what your comments would be about how to move through that.
Well, one thing that we need to be very careful of is, first of all, we all make mistakes. When the injunction was given to be perfect, even as I am perfect, obviously Jesus was not referring to this world. That it to be perfect within this world is perfectly impossible because it is an imperfect world. And so we can't put our trust in any, you know, we can love others, and when we love others, we do trust them. But we're not trusting in the temporal shifting chain tides of time and space. What we're trusting in is the love within the relationship. So this, what was her name?
Adrienne.
So Adrienne can go on placing her trust in, again, the world of form, time and space, and it will continually let her down because this changing world was never meant to be permanent, nor was it ever meant to fulfill us. We are eternal beings. We are eternal children of the light and children of the day. And the only truly trustworthy thing that is unchanging, unchanged, and unchangeable is love. And so I would submit to Adrienne that if she wants to, you know, here again we have the mental malpractice of saying, okay, how can I change this person? How can I change this man to make him a trustworthy man? Well, that's not the prescription I would give her. The prescription I would give her would be, okay, first of all, begin to change your mind here. First of all, don't be afraid, because every time you feed any perceptions you have, and by the way, why doesn't she trust him? Has he cheated on her before? Well, if he had, I don't know, this is just a scenario, but if he had, if her fears feed into it, I actually, in the book, had a couple that did this. This woman had just gotten a divorce from a previous relationship from a man who had cheated on her. And so she was extremely, she met this new man now, and she was extremely scared that he was going to do the same thing. And so she would make calls to his work like 5 times a day, and just, it was driving him absolutely crazy, he said. And the marriage ended not because the man cheated on his wife, but because of the fear that she had that he would, that caused the demise of the relationship. A Course in Miracles says it beautifully, "Take not one step into the descent toward hell, for having taken one, you will not recognize the others when they follow." In other words, when she begins to fear and not trust in the love moving through that relationship, and not the box or the form she's built around it, like you've got to do this, 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 and this, and make it a conditional love, that form is going to collapse under its own weight, because that forms in this world were never meant to bring happiness. Marriage was never meant to be a source of happiness, merely a vehicle for it. Same way with dating, same way with sexual intimacy with someone.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my advice to her. Again, she may be perceiving darkness outside of herself, but that darkness is not outside of herself. Again, I repeat, we never respond to anything directly. We only respond to our interpretation of it. So when someone's not trusting a relationship, it is because they have rejected this darkness that they're feeding and keeping alive, and they're putting it into their unconscious, and they're projecting it outward and saying, "I'm not bad, you are, you're untrustworthy," and those thoughts sabotage the relationships. And if Adrian wanted to correct the situation, she would simply step back when those voices of fear come up, and they will come up, and put them in their place. You know, first of all, past thoughts, previous husband maybe cheated on her, forgive it, let it go. There's an old saying, we crucify ourselves between two thieves, past regrets and future expectations. And all I would submit to her is take each moment of each hour of each day and trust through her thoughts. If she loved this individual, she would extend to that individual the trust she thinks is lacking. Actually, you know, many times in relationships, you find that the one who's not trustworthy is the one who thinks the other person is not trustworthy. And so it again creates a cycle of sabotage. And the way to correct that is to stop it right in its tracks, because we are not victims of the world we see. I'm not saying she should be allowing an individual to be a doormat in her life. You know, if someone's gambling your money away or a drug addict is, you know, ruining the relationship, I'm not saying that a change in form is appropriate. I'm saying bring love to the situation. And when you're not trusting another individual, the love within that other individual, what you're trusting in is something temporal, and it will always let you down. And I tell people, to the degree that you invest your life or your power and give it away to other people, like, you know, "I don't trust you," or whatever, to that degree will you be in pain when that person leaves or goes away, because you've given your power away to them to upset you. And nobody has the power to upset you. Only you upset yourself. And again, it's all about how we view our relationships. Is it through the lens of fear that we've created? Is it through, you know, a yardstick of time and space that we're taking to everybody and saying, "Oh, you know, he's handsome and she's not, and he's trustworthy and he's not," and so forth. And when we really, if you want to be honest about it, I'm not asking people not to judge. I'm simply submitting that they don't have the capacity to judge. Just like the woman who felt her husband was cheating on her when he wasn't, but her fear fed into the illusion that he was, and it ended the relationship. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
That makes sense. But I think, Kevin, that the key thing is to remember to come from love, because I know a lot of people, when they experience something devastating and painful,
mm-hmm.
such as trusting in somebody who cheats or lies, that, you know, the instinct is to protect yourself and not put yourself
exactly.
in that vulnerable state, because you can really get ill from it.
You can get ill from it. And, you know, there's a lesson in this. We don't have to learn through pain. And so you're absolutely right. And I focus heavily in my book in Chapter 3 on this, that if an individual feels as though they're not in the proper atmosphere in terms of a relationship, there's nothing wrong. I mean, sometimes the most loving thing to do is to get a divorce. Or, you know, to change the situation, or to, you know, quit dating an individual. Sometimes that's the most loving thing to do. But when that is done, when that decision is made, it must be done gently. It must be done with love. And I'll tell you something. I've been in 2-3 relationships lasted for a long time. And when the form of those relationships changed, I made sure that the change was gentle. And how I did that was focusing upon the love, you know, forgiving, letting go, and so forth. Now, you talk about, Pat, I think it was the one who asked me this, the pain that comes through it. And what I recommend to people, you know, when they're going through pain, and this is discussed in Chapter 5, they actually create within their thinking a scenario that keeps the pain. And so what I wrote in the book and what I'm telling you and your listeners is that when those stabs of pain come, and they will come in relationships, our tendency is to define it and say, this is what this is. This is pain from him. Or this is disappointment because My wife did not kiss me when she came home from work today, and she always kisses me, and all this stuff. And most people, through their ego think, is what I call it, try to come up with scenarios and try to say, fix it, to get rid of the pain. And what I recommend is this, that instead of, let me give you a scenario. Let's say Bobby thinks Susie is cheating on him. So Bobby thinks up several scenarios in his mind of how to, quote-unquote, fix the problem. Well, maybe I'll hire a private detective. Maybe I'll have one of my friends kind of follow her around. I'll call her more at work, you know, keep tabs on her. That's not the way to solve a problem. That's the way to compound a problem. The way to solve, to allow this feeling to dissipate of pain within anyone's being, is to allow your mind to go abstract. Quit thinking. Remove the name. You know, remove the name Susie. Remove the story of why you think you're in pain. Remove it. And remove the definition even of the word pain. And allow yourself to feel the feeling without judging it. And when I say judge it, I mean, this is pain, you know, this is from Bobby or Susie. But just to let the whole story go, and as the Tao Te Ching says, stop thinking for a little bit and end your problems. And allow the feeling to be felt. And when you do, you'll feel it in your solar plexus, as most people do. And it will feel like a burning sensation. You know what I mean? You felt it before, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And the way that burning sensation, you know, stays there and grows and festers when we keep saying, this is where the pain came from, this is how it happened, it doesn't leave you. And we don't want people to be in pain. We want them to be in peace. We want them to enjoy the comforts of love. And so by merely... And I explain through my miracle mirror method and other exercises how to do this, is to just feel it. Don't judge it. And I even go a step further and say, I am that. I am. because I know that in truth, ultimate reality here, you know, we're dealing with two levels, ultimate reality and this changing and shifting world of time and space. And oftentimes we just need to go abstract. That brings us into the present moment. We're not in the past or in the future, and bringing those two things into the present and thinking that that is reality, when in fact it is not. And so if an individual wants to get rid of that pain, I mean, who wants, I love the slogan, no pain, no pain. That's the way I want to live my life. And when that comes, it will dissipate once you stop judging it or defining it or adding a story to it or adding a label to it.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Great, Kevin. Well, I think you might have answered this one, but I have a question here from Debbie from Port St. Lucie, wanted to know, in opening up your heart again after hurt or painful relationship, what would you say about that?
Can you repeat that question? I didn't hear it all.
How do I open up my heart again after a painful and hurtful relationship?
By recognizing that the pain is not coming from the one she thinks the pain is coming from. And this is covered in Chapter 4. There is no reason. Do we all here on the radio, Pat and Sherry, we accept the premise that we're all one, right?
Right.
Okay, we're all connected. That's a scientific fact. Quantum physics, unified theory, chaos theory. I'm not going to go into it, but I bring that up to say that she's asking how she can open up her heart again, and my question is, why is it closed? It's closed because you want it closed, and again, I don't want to be gentle here. I know I've been through very painful breakups and so forth, so I know the pain of not only having to have the breakup, but opening your heart up and trusting again to love. And I would submit to her in Port St. Lucie that the way to open up your heart, and this actually happened to me, took about a year, actually, and it doesn't have to take that long, but all of these conceptual offerings I'm providing for you mean nothing unless you are experiencing it. And so she can, first of all, give thanks. Give thanks to the relationship, to the man or woman that she has broken up with, or he broke up with her, to forgive it completely, to give thanks for it. Because we are assured that if we give thanks to anything, whether it be, I don't care where it is on the scale, on either extreme, to give thanks to another individual is to be giving thanks to yourself. And what is she thanking him for? She's thanking him for what? Teaching her a lesson. What was the lesson? Lesson was, and the lesson for her is that love, you know, like we're not around, we're not like little children. Well, actually, many people are like little children sitting around a Christmas tree, and they only want the biggest box with the biggest wrapping paper, okay? Not even considering the other presents that may be much, much more valuable. And this is what many people do in life. They want the best package, you know, and they couldn't care less what's inside, and whether it be fear or love. And I guess where I'm going with this, the reason why we want to give thanks is because we're looking at the wrapping paper through our interpretation. She's not looking at the gift, perhaps, that this man has given her. And what is the gift? It's love. She may see it as fear or revenge or whatever, but it's never that, because fear is not real. So it must be love or a call to it. So whenever she thinks about him, say, you know what, that's a call for love. And what happens when we change our mind instead of saying that jerk and getting punitive, but saying he's calling out for love, give him that love unconditionally. I'm not talking about this version of romantic love that was created, but unconditional love to this man and give him thanks for giving her a gift. And she has certainly learned, hopefully from the relationship, and hopefully doesn't want to repeat the pattern again. But she will repeat the pattern again, and her heart will remain closed as long as her thoughts are stuck in the past. And are literally, she is giving power away to this past relationship in order to giving her happiness away or power away, so that now she can have it until she retrieves it back from him. How does she retrieve it back from him? Very easily. Stating an affirmation, changing my mind. Let's say his name was Pete. Pete, my love I give you so I may know God's love is mine. I see you with your heart open so I may see my own heart opening and receiving God's love as well. You see, here's the difference between getting out your love extinguisher, okay, and spraying that love extinguisher all over this person and saying, love is not there, when in fact love is there. You're just not seeing it. You're choosing to see it through the eyes of, well, he did this, that, and the other to me. And that's why forgiveness is such an integral part of relationships, because the ego's version of forgiveness is, forgive the violation, but don't forgive the violator. In other words, I don't mean to laugh. It's just amusing, and it should be. People should be able to laugh this away. They forgive the violation. Okay, you made a mistake, but don't ever make it again, you know, as though they're, again, placing that individual upon a pedestal and asking them to be what no person can be, like I did with Jimmy Swaggart. There's a saying, and I'm trying to remember the book, but it says, the savages set up gods to whom they pray and to whom they will punish when one of their prayers is not answered. And this is what we do in relationships. We pick out, you know, could you move over to the right there? You're not my special relationship. Could you move over to the left? Oh, there you are, you know. And we're going through life picking and choosing and saying, love, this is the way I want you to show up in my life, instead of stepping back and saying, God, love, I don't know how you want me to show up. I don't know. And that's the second piece of advice I would give her, is to say, I don't know what this means, you know, this breakup. I don't know what this feeling means. There, she's not defining it. She's not labeling it. Show me. Because most people are going around life dictating to love how they want love to show up. What vehicle, you know, 2.5 kids, pick a fence, a dog, whatever. And
I just wanted to tell you that we only have like 2 minutes. I want you to give your a contact number or tell our listeners how they can get your book and where they can find you.
Forgive me, my stronger suit is not brevity, as you probably understand. So I forgive me for going on. I've just been doing it.
Time has gone so quickly.
I just looked at the clock, blown away. www.changingtherules.net. And if anybody wants to buy the book, if they enter the code word, and this is just for this your radio program, enter the word Unity on the Bay as a passcode. When they get through it, the shipping will be free. And so there will be no sales tax either. And I'll be at Unity of Martin County, which is real close to Port St. Lucie, on March 8th. And then you can go to their website, Unity of Martin County. And then Unity on the Bay, March 15th. I'll be there doing a seminar on the book. Changing Times Books and Gifts on Saturday the 28th at 5:30 to 7:30, and that's $25 per ticket. But that's a seminar as well as a book signing, and that's in West Palm Beach. So many more coming up, but I know you have time constraints.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much. We're honored to have you on our show, and we do hope maybe sometime in the future you'll come back on. It sounds like
I would be honored to,
Sheree
and Pat, and thank you so much, both of you.
All right, Kevin.
Well, have a great
thank
day.
You.
Thank you.
God bless you, and God bless everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Wow, that was great.
Thank
you. Well, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed that. I know you have. Get in touch with Kevin Rice and pick up his book. It's really, it's an easy read, and it's really helpful. So stay tuned for our show next week. Sheree and I will be here with another special guest.
Yes, and I want to say, when your love for each other exceeds your need for each other, that's a beautiful place to be.
That's a beautiful thing. Thank you. Signing off.
Bye-bye. Have a great week. Bye-bye.